This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao-Ik. Instead of getting health education information from a clinic, how about getting it from your regular barbershop or at your beauty salon during your next facial? The National Cancer Society of Malaysia has embarked on a program called Beauty and Health, which aims to use local beauty salons and barbershops to increase cancer awareness among the community. So I'm catching up with NCSM's Managing Director, Dr. Muralidharan Munisamy, to find out how this will work and why he thinks it may be time to move health awareness away from just the traditional healthcare settings. Hi, Murali. Thanks for speaking to me. How are you?
Hello. Always a pleasure to be on. So yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on what sounds to be a very, very interesting initiative. And I have been reading about other countries that have piloted this as well. But before we get to that, I think the bigger picture when it comes to cancer care in Malaysia, I want to touch a little bit on a report that was just released by the Ministry of Health here in Malaysia and the World Health Organization last week. And, it was about the direct costs of treatment for a few non-communicable chronic diseases. Cancer was one of them. Absolutely. And it was found, I'm really just pulling one of the many figures from the report. The average cost of a hospital episode for cancer was just a little over 7,000 ringgit. So the report quoted figures collected back in 2017. And I'm sure there are many other statistics and if you want to draw upon any of them. But I really want to just kind of draw it back to individuals, right? What does this kind of cost of care mean in terms of burden to individuals?
Right. So, of course, this is in terms of the cost of cancer, which may not be translated directly to patients. Patients get a much more subsidized kind of costing, right? So this actual cost of disease management by itself. And really, as you would very well know, cancer is not a one-stop center. It's not dengue. So it's not going to be a single hospital episode. We're talking about maybe on average about four to six about kind of big hospital admissions, and leaving out things like radiotherapy, where you get many, many cycles over an extended period of time. So probably like kind of take the take-home snapshot from that single figure is that's one cost out of a lot of repeated costs, which end up making up the mainstay of active cancer treatment.
Mm. And that's, like you said, a burden to the entire healthcare system, which eventually we can't think of it as, somebody's paying for it, right? Eventually, the strain is going to come back on us. I wanted to use that to kick off because if nothing else, that should prove the point that we should be looking investing far more into preventing cancer than treating it. And when it comes back to individuals, what does cancer prevention mean to us? What will it take on my part to prevent cancer?
Okay, so just perhaps to kind of quickly let you know about two things that make it very difficult for people to prevent chronic disease, at least within their kind of behavioral mindset. The one is that people look for some kind of satisfaction or gratification, right? So, for example, I go and have a plate of char kway teow, I'm really happy. I'm full, I'm happy, I'm content. But the problem with prevention is I exercise every day, for example, for 20 years, and in 20 years, I won't get cancer. So, the gratification is so far away that very often it's a big challenge to continuously stay motivated. And the second thing is, very often, it's the kind of the reward from health prevention can never be something that's tangible. It's like, I run a marathon, I win. I buy a new car, I get to ride in a new car. There's actually no achievement. The achievement is like that there's no achievement. I don't get cancer. So it's something which is very difficult for the kind of human mindset, human behavioral complex to kind of understand, which is why it's really difficult to get onto prevention, right? So it's like, it's the promise of a better future. And that doesn't sustain us past the neighborhood cha kway teow. That's really the challenge. Yeah. So prevention, as you were saying, is something we all can do. It's relatively very cheap. In fact, I argue in many cases, it's actually a direct saving. For example, don't eat as much. It just costs you so much less. But it's just impossible.
Don't smoke cigarettes, right? Imagine how much you save, not just by not smoking the diseases.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So it's preventive behavior. It's actually a lot less cost onto the wallet in immediate terms.
And, along with that behavioral aspect, going for screening, right? And I know that's a big part of cancer prevention in order to identify anything early as well and treat it early. But there's a big behavioral barrier there when it comes to screening also.
Absolutely. And again, the behavior, the barrier, right, is very interesting. So leave alone excess barriers like, low social income, geographic barriers, like you're really far away from a hospital. And of course, kind of the social kind of barriers. It's not convenient for me to go to screening. I have to work every day. Oh, my husband's not keen for me to go to screening. My wife's not keen for me to go to screening. These kind of things, leave it aside. If you left all these aside, you still have this huge kind of mental or kind of mental health barrier that's very challenging. And this barrier is actually kind of three things intertwined among each other. One is, why do I need to spend so much of money for something that will, again, net me negative results? Because the end of a screening, if it's good, is that you have no outcome. I do not have cancer. Now, you spend money to get a negative result. You have no idea how many patients of mine complain. It's like, oh, I did this test. And then, it's turned out negative. I'm like, okay, you do not want a positive test. But yeah, so that's one aspect of the kind of mental block or the mental barrier. The second is, of course, this fear of the unknown, of, what if I do this test and it turns out that it's going to be positive. So that always is kind of, for many people, it's an insurmountable barrier. It's something they can never get across. And the third very interesting barrier within this kind of mental health packet towards not getting health screening is the fact that people forget, one. People purposefully forget because, again, it's like, every year I need to waste time and go and do this. It's not worth it because, I'm not going to get something out of it. But the problem with screening is again, the kind of persistence, which is kind of what makes it a quintessential part of prevention. It's the fact that you have to keep on doing it consistently and constantly. And only then, you get a reward or the lack of any kind of bad outcome at the end. So,
and do you think that consistent and regular presence at a healthcare facility is a block for people, that we still have a culture where we treat healthcare as something we access only when we're sick and we need it, and therefore it just doesn't make sense to us to be proactive about seeking out healthcare when nothing is actually wrong, quote unquote?
Absolutely. And this is kind of why we try to shift this paradigm shift away from health to wellness, right? But I think And this is just probably an inane comment. It's become very medicalized in the sense that our transition. So you're absolutely right, Shaik. You're saying that people don't like to go to hospitals. People don't like to go to clinics. It's obviously associated with this idea of illness, right? And which absolutely is something we need to get rid of as we move towards wellness and contextually in a kind of behavioral larger landscape. It's always like, oh, I'll never be able to associate being well with having to undergo an activity in a health facility, right? But in our transition to wellness, what's wellness now become? It's become like a byword for an entire industry.
Which is a commercial industry.
Yeah, which is being driven by all these kind of various tests, various machines, various like get well thingamajigs or quick fix solutions. However, at the end of that spectrum, actually, you get to what idealistically people were talking about wellness was. We're taking out the concept of health away from this entire medicalized kind of lens and looking at it within your everyday life. So it's like wellness within the marketplace, or, you know, wellness within the restaurant. So it's everything else within your daily life, which doesn't necessarily need to be at all associated with a healthcare facility. And so that's where we're trying to inch people out from. Wellness within the temple, for example, I don't know.
Absolutely. Wellness where people are, where they are with their families, where they're spending their time. It has nothing to do with the privilege of paying for a service as well. Yes. And that will lead us nicely to your program, which we will discuss when we come back from the break. I'm speaking to the Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia, Dr. Murali Munisamy, about an initiative by the society to rope in barbershops and beauty salons in cancer awareness. So let's find out more about that. Don't go anywhere on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. I'm speaking to Dr. Muralidharan Munisamy, Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia. He's talking about taking the concept of health, wellness, healthy living, health education, health awareness, away from the medicalized lens, and talking about it within everyday life, bringing the messages to people in the community, and through a new initiative called Beauty and Health, which I'm going to ask Dr. Murali to elaborate a little bit more on. And you know, just the backdrop to all of this is the sheer fact that, number one, cancer is a huge burden in our society, not just for the healthcare system in terms of the billions it costs to the government, for instance, to pay for it in the public healthcare sector, but also to every single individual and family that has been stricken by cancer. It's not rocket science to know how painful and how debilitating cancer can be, even with the advances in treatment today. But Dr. Murali, let's have a bit more of an optimistic view. Cancer can be prevented if we can get past a lot of the behavioral barriers that you were talking about earlier. And one way to do that is to kind of not wait anymore for people to seek out healthcare in a medical setting, but reach out to them directly where they are in the community. So tell us more about the Beauty and Health program.
Sure. So beauty and health is actually beauty itself is a synonym.
It's an acronym.
So it's bringing education and understanding to you. And our colleagues from Japan, who are our collaborators onto the project, a consortium of experts across Japan called the Asia Cancer Forum, the eminent academicians from across the kind of creme de la creme of the Japanese universities. And so they've worked in community settings in China. And they actually ran this long project for a long while, which worked on exactly doing this, kind of spreading health preventive messages within barbershops and beauty salons. And what the study did find in the long term is they managed to change quite a lot of people who have never gone for a health screening to start going for health screenings. People became more aware of their health. So they started doing things like changing their diet. And most of these activities were kind of garnered around or built around the idea of these barbers or the beauty salon beauticians as change agents, as people who would initiate conversations with you and share with you little snippets of health information. But rather than being a doctor or something, they would just point you out to places where you could go to find more information. You'd put up brochures in the shops, and this is how they got these things sorted out. Now, what is interesting is, in the long run, it wasn't about the fact that these places became a clinic or a hospital or something. It was just that beauty salons and barbershops, and this is in Malaysia as well as pretty much everywhere in the world, they're usually places where people hang out. especially on Saturdays and Sundays, if you go to any kind of barbershop in Malaysia, or even on most evenings, actually, now, you'll find at least about 10 or 12 people, everybody's talking about some kind of gossip about either this movie star or celebrity or, you know, or politician, depends on what's the kind of taste of the day. And there's a lot more of a camaraderie, a kind of togetherness feeling. And basically, to put it quite brutally, it's highly effective for the change agent. The person who's talking to you about health has got a knife at their throat. You're literally at their mercy.
Exactly. Captive audience.
Captive audience. So it utilizes this idea that now has become very popular in behavioral kind of mechanisms called nudging. So it's a little nudge to tell the person, hey, look, you know, there's these things going on. Hey, were you aware about cancer? Oh, this month is colorectal cancer month. Have you kind of looked at getting tested? So those kind of messages which help to kind of drive it. And then we're trying to, at the back end of it, have like a foundational kind of portal that people can go to kind of access where can they get screenings nearby, you know, where can they learn more. We're also running this entire project in every language that we can think of. So for the start, we're doing it in Malay, English, Mandarin, and Tamil, and trying to build on messaging which is video friendly, graphics, more so than all our dry kind of medical literature that sometimes we get trapped in.
I'm just wondering, culturally, we may not be very used to having open conversations with not really strangers. Like you said, these are regular spots for many people. They may get to know their regular barbers and all that. But, you know, it must still be difficult to start that conversation, right? Especially some conditions may be a bit more sensitive. You're going to talk about, I don't know, prostate cancer, for instance, right? What do you think is the barrier there? And, you know, how can you train then your barbers and beauticians to approach subjects like this?
Absolutely. So in short, we're going to do it very carefully and build the intervention over a long period of time. So this is not something we're going to jump into next week. You'll see it developing slowly over about a period of 3 years. And you've hit on like quite a very important, significant fact. The fact that rather than this being driven by medical people, we're actually building the interventions together with, from the very outset, together with barbers and beauticians, working with them to see what kind of messaging is comfortable. What would they be comfortable saying and sharing, and kind of building the narrative back again from that. So even the kind of messaging that we're giving to them, the training, it's all going to be very back and forth as we try to cross into their world, basically. So that we understand, and more importantly, they understand how to put across these messages, but in a manner and style that they are accustomed to their clients.
You know, I was reading about similar initiatives like this, and the US has tried a few as well, especially for barbers in the Black community, which is typically most vulnerable when it comes to healthcare access. And I was reading this interesting quote, a barbershop owner in the US, a Black barbershop owner who is involved in these initiatives, and it was, I think, for cancer awareness. His name is Waverly Willis, and he was quoted as saying that men don't go to the doctor unless something is falling off.
And, oh, wow. Yeah.
How big of a problem is it if you translate to Malaysian men? And I think the barbers play a really huge role here in reaching out to men, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're not making it gender specifically. Look, I know a couple of boys, like good friends of mine, even nephews who turn up very regularly to beauty salons. It's whatever they're comfortable with. Similarly, there's a lot of moms who take their kids to like all these Indian uncle barbershop types. And they're the ones, oh, see, there you go. Yeah. And they're the ones who pretty much have a really good relationship with the barber.
These barbers know the best school haircuts, the school regulation haircuts.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. So it's about reaching back into the community, because I told you about the three barriers earlier. The fact that one, you kind of forget. So you want to be in a context where somebody is kind of gently nudging you, or that, hey, did you remember? And again, this then is outside your kind of the need for you to go to a doctor specifically for a doctor to remind you that, hey, it's time for you to, you know, get your yearly check done or something. And it's something that it will arise within the context of absolutely normal community or normal communal kind of engagement. So that is the idea. The second is, of course, and this we have seen work in other communities, as you were saying, in China, our partners have done this as well, very successfully. And it's actually called peer modeling, where I wouldn't go for a prostate exam, but like if my friend who's cutting hair alongside with me says, hey, I've got it done, wasn't too bad, then it kind of moves the needle a little bit for you to actually change. It's like, oh, and the other guy will chime in, and the third guy who's there will kind of initiate as well to say that, oh, it didn't look too bad at all. So, and the kind of peer modeling that we hope will take place as well will also kind of drive behavior change. So people will be a little more motivated to kind of go and get stuff done or get screenings, or even like, oh, I started jogging. We're also hoping, and this happened in China as well, where people actually started getting together for like group activities, exercise activities, and all of this kind of spilled out from the kind of barbershop or beauty salon communities.
Mm. So communication, nudging towards some interventions like starting to go for screening, right? Anything else that will eventually be part of this initiative?
Okay, so as I was saying, at the end of the day, it'd be crazy for us to not kind of build on digital technology. So there's this very face-to-face component, which is very old school, but there's also kind of our kind of little IT tweak to it. So at the back end, we're kind of putting up building as well, like an ecosystem, as I was saying, things like, you know, we probably leave like QR codes or like download kind of prompts for people to go onto a website and an app that'll be kind of available. Of course, in the future, we'll see whether we can even mate it with things like existing kind of wallet apps or something. It could fit into Shopee or anything else, really. But the idea is that will have its own kind of content that people can go to watch. For example, I want to start looking at cutting down the amount of sugar that I take. How do I do it? Okay, click on a video to start watching that. So there'll be this kind of things that are built on that as content, but also a voucher. So for example, if you're staying in Kepong, and you'll also have a list of, oh, look, these hospitals are running this kind of promotions. The Ministry of Health in this clinic, Kesihatan, has this test available. You can go do it. So that kind of things. And in addition to this, we're also introducing a component of like your individual kind of own little mini health record where you can actually park. We're trying to make available the opportunity for you to park like your own little test results. So it's convenient for you to shop, or most possibly in the future, as this gets a little bit more fleshed out, we're going to be talking to the Ministry of Health to see whether we can kind of put on stuff onto them as well.
Does this require a lot of investment?
Yes, it does. And it's a good kind of point to segue into. So, of course, the National Cancer Society of Malaysia is putting in quite a bit of human resources, financial resources as well. And so our partners from Asia Cancer Forum. But most importantly, I think one of the people who have really seen the kind of value of this project in the bigger kind of preventive scope is Astellas. And Astellas Global has really come in to support this program for the next 3 years or so.
Mm, and you do want sustainability as well, beyond 3 years, for this to be able to continue and grow, hopefully, right?
Absolutely. And what we intend to do is we're going to like kind of match or align our activities to ensure that we can continue to support the portal and the activities that run across it. Because though this kind of beauty is running in barber shops and beauty salons, there's nothing to say that we can't take this and throw it into, say, a community kind of orientation of a school, or, you know, around a PTA, like parent teachers associations, or even restaurants. You know, all of us eat the mama every day. you know, might be an interesting place to start.
It will be interesting because you need some re-education of the food preparation in the first place, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, I could see where that could happen in tandem as well. And I love the idea because I do a lot of shows on mental health, and a lot of the experts we talk to bring up, like the Friendship Bench Initiative in Zimbabwe, they train grandmothers to do talk therapy. So they don't have enough psychologists and psychiatrists. So they recruit people who are actually local and well-respected community leaders. And grandmothers sit down and you can go and talk to them about your troubles. They're not your grandmother, but... And this is really, like you said, moving healthcare out of healthcare, so to speak, right?
Yeah. Right. Out of sick care.
Out of sick care, yes. That's the phrase of the day, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you ensure, though, that the information that your ambassadors, you know, so to speak, are delivering are accurate and they're not inadvertently giving the wrong information, especially with health, right? You want to make sure that they're not promoting something that's not evidence-based.
Absolutely. So what we're trying to do there is, of course, we've got like quite a lot of stakeholders in the project. But in terms of delivery, we're working together with barbershops, kind of chains, beauty parlors, like chains of beauty parlors, the associations themselves. Of the Hairstylist Association, the Hairdressers Association, the Barbers, Malaysian Indian Barbers Association. And what we're trying to do is put together a formal training program. So people will attend. We're going to kind of recompense them for the time that they take out to come to the program. We'll credential them. And then like I said, I think the most important part is we're going to make sure a lot of details paid to the fact that they are lay people. So it's not that they're going to be talking to you about, you know, what a PET scan result is going to be like, but it's more of the messaging is going to be centered around basic information, but more prompting you to take a step for yourself and go and find out more. We're trying not to keep the kind of health education messages, again, very medicalized, because we think that's the wrong way to go.
And at the end of the day, what's important is all this investment, you know, from NCSM, from your partners, investment from the barbers, for instance, and the beauticians themselves to see this through. It will be interesting to know what are the results, right? Is all this investment worth it? So let's say in Japan where they've done it, or in US there have been some pilot projects, right? How do they measure whether it's been successful or not?
Okay, so in terms of like immediate outcomes, right, immediate outputs, right, you look at things like, oh, how many people are actually downloading the app? How many people are actually getting on to like watch some of the content that's being created? But at the same time, I think, and this comes in, the fact of why we want to put in this individual kind of health records comes in, as in we also plan to look at to see how much of behavior actually changes. How many people kind of get really on to, say, a fitness app which is connected to this, or to sign up to a fitness activity and actually attend it. Or even we hope to be able to measure things like, you know, how many people have actually ended up going for a mammogram, how many people have gone for a prostate cancer examination. And those are all very possible with like the kind of voucher downloads, all these kind of additional prompts that we want to make available on the platform.
Mm-hmm. And then the effects of that is something that you said, right? You only see way down the road now.
So I think, like how to say, is this a promise to kind of prevent cancer? Not so much as it is as to set people into changing their behavior, right? And the other point about it is, and again, this is when the kind of long-term sustainability is very important as well, because it's not about them going for that first health checkup. It's about them persisting after the second year to go for it and, you know, third year to go for it. And for us, success is actually going to be measured in that. If we can keep them at those health behaviors persistently, we know for sure, because then the science is very clear for us. That is all proven science. Our job is to make sure that they keep at it. So think about us like the program is your mother, your wife, horrible generalizations, who will basically, you know, tell you multiple times to make sure you get on track and get something done, but also perhaps, and nowadays your personal life coach or your personal trainer who's like shouting at you to get that last 5 push-ups done.
Mothers and wives out there will be very happy that somebody else is taking over the nagging, I think.
No, it's not nagging, it's nudging.
Just a last one then. I guess, you know, what are you looking at in terms of timeline? You know, when do you think this will really kick off?
Okay, so as you can see, we're also being very careful. What we don't want to do is throw a whole lot of things and you know, it going nowhere in terms of success. So we're actually putting up little small pilots everywhere. One pilot is to kind of run the training. So we're starting to develop modules to train the trainers because even the training, we're running it in different languages and in different cultural contexts. So like the Mandarin training module is entirely like, it's a whole different thing than the, say, Tamil training module, simply because it caters to a different pocket of individuals as well. So that's being done. And then what we're looking for is also in terms of health messaging, we've got a whole different group working on content to see what different type of content works for different kind of groups of people in Malaysia. So the messages need to be like content specific for those kind of channels as well. So that's something that we're looking at. And then we're going to start slow piloting towards, I think, in the beginning of next year, small barbershops and beauty salons which actually run different type of these interventions to see what actually works, what messaging works. So it's a work in progress. You'll see it at a barbershop near you. And then once we are ready and comfortable with like the big successes, we know this thing works in Malaysia, that's when, you know, we kind of roll it out in a big way.
All right, fantastic. We'll definitely be watching out for this in our local barbershops, beauty salons and hair salons as well. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Murali Dharamunisamy, Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.